Chapter 8. The Battle of Love. Out of kindness to his mother, Paul did not go much to Willey Farm for a while. He sent two pictures to the autumn exhibition of students' work at the Castle Museum, and both of them won first prizes. He was most excited, and his mother was enormously pleased. William had won sports prizes, which she still kept. She did not forgive his death. Arthur, now in the army, was handsome, warm, and generous. He would probably do well in the end. But Paul was going to do something important in life. She believed in him more firmly because he himself did not seem to realize his own capabilities. Life for her was rich with promise. Her struggle had not been for nothing. Several times during the exhibition, Mrs. Morell went to the Castle Museum, unknown to Paul. She wandered round the long room, looking at the other pictures. Some made her jealous, they were so good. Then suddenly, she had a shock that made her heart beat. There hung Paul's picture. Name, Paul Morell. First prize. She felt a proud woman. When she passed well-dressed ladies going home through the park, she thought to herself, "Yes, you look very fine, but I wonder if your son has two first prizes in the exhibition." One day, Paul met Miriam in the street in Nottingham. He had not expected to meet her in town. She was walking with a rather impressive young woman, fair-haired, with a discontented expression, who held herself boldly upright. It was strange how small Miriam looked beside this woman with the handsome shoulders. Miriam watched Paul closely. His eyes were on the stranger, not on her. She explained that she had driven into market with her father.
"I've told you about Mrs. Dawes," she said nervously. "Clara, do you know Paul?"
"I think I've seen him before," replied Mrs. Dawes, showing little interest as she shook hands.
She had proud grey eyes, a skin like white honey, and a full mouth, with a slightly lifted top lip. Her clothes were simple and rather dull. Clearly she was poor, and unlike Miriam, did not have much taste.
"Where have you seen me?" asked Paul.
"Walking with Louis Travers," she replied.
Louis was one of the girls in the factory.
"How do you know her?"
he asked. She did not answer. The two women moved on towards the castle. Paul remembered that Clara was the daughter of an old friend of Mrs. Lever's. She had once held one of the better jobs at Jordan's, and her husband, Baxter Dawes, still worked there, making metal parts. But Mrs. Dawes was separated from her husband and had taken up the cause of women. People said she was clever. He knew Baxter Dawes from work, a big, well-built man of 31 or 2. He had the same white skin as his wife and a golden moustache, but his eyes moved continually this way and that. He seemed to have little self-respect. Usually, he was rude and insulting. He and Paul met often enough in the factory and disliked each other. Clara Dawes had no children. She now lived with her mother. The next time Miriam saw him, she asked,
"What did you think of Clara Dawes?"
"She has a good figure," answered Paul, "but she doesn't look very friendly."
"Is she unpleasant as a person?"
"I don't think so. I think she's discontented, still married to a man like Baxter." "What other things did you like about her?"
"Oh, I don't know.
Her passionate mouth, the shape of her throat, her skin. There's something fierce about her.
I think I'd like to do a painting of her."
Miriam seemed strangely lost in thought. "You don't really like her, do you?" he asked her.
"Oh, yes, I do,"
she said. "Perhaps you like her because she's so much against men." Paul was now 21. Mr. Jordan had put him in charge of the department where he worked and had increased his wages to 30 shillings a week. At the art school, he was studying design. He was also helping Miriam to learn French. On Friday evenings, when his father went to the pub and his mother to the market, Paul was left at home to watch the baking of the bread. Annie, who was now engaged to be married to Leonard, her young man, was also out visiting. At 7:15, there was a low knock, and Miriam came in. He showed her his latest artwork and corrected the French she had written for him. This week, she had done well. He loved to talk about his work with Miriam. All his passion went into these conversations. Somehow, she lit up his imagination.
"Aren't you forgetting the bread?"
Miriam said suddenly. Paul rushed to open the oven door. Out came bluish smoke. One loaf was hard as a brick. Another was burned black along one side. Paul tried to scratch off the burnt part, then wrapped it in a wet towel and left it in the back kitchen. They went back to their French until it was time for Miriam to go home. Paul turned down the gas and they set off. He did not get home again until 11:15. His mother was in her chair reading the local newspaper. Annie was sitting in front of the fire, looking gloomy. The burnt loaf, unwrapped, stood on the table. Paul felt very uncomfortable. For some minutes, he sat pretending to read. Then, "I forgot that bread, Mother." There was no answer from either woman.
"You don't know how ill our mother is," said Annie after a pause.
"Why, is she so ill?"
asked Paul sharply.
"She could hardly get home. I found her white as anything sitting here,"
said Annie in a tearful voice.
"I had so many parcels," said Mrs. Morell. "The meat and the vegetables and a pair of curtains."
"Let Annie fetch the meat," said Paul. "But how was I to know? You were off with Miriam instead of being here when Mother came."
"And what's the matter with you?" Paul asked his mother.
"I suppose it's my heart,"
she replied. She certainly looked bluish round the mouth.
"And have you felt it before?"
"Yes, often enough."
"Then why haven't you told me?
And why haven't you seen a doctor?"
"You'd never notice anything," said Annie. "You're too eager to be off with Miriam."
"So that was why the bread was spoiled," said Mrs. Morell bitterly.
"No, it was not," he replied angrily.
"I bought you a nice piece of cheese," said his mother.
He was too angry to go and look for it.
"I don't want anything," he said.
"If I want you to go out on a Friday night, you say you're too tired," she complained.
"But you're never too tired to go if she comes for you."
"I can't let her go back alone."
"Can't you?
Then why does she come?"
"Because you want her."
"I do like to talk to her, but I don't love her," Paul explained. "We talk about painting and books. You know you don't care whether a picture is decorative or not."
"How do you know I don't care?"
"Oh, you're old, Mother, and we're young."
He only meant that the interests of her age group were not the interests of his. But the moment he had spoken, he realized that he had said the wrong thing. It was too painful. He realized that he was life to her. And after all, she was the chief thing to him. The only all-important thing.
No, Mother. I really don't love her. I talk to her, but I want to come home to you.
As he bent to kiss his mother, she threw her arms round his neck and cried in a desperate voice quite unlike her own.
It's too much. I could let another woman, but not her. And I've never... You know, Paul, I've never had a husband. Not really.
Immediately, he hated Miriam bitterly. His mother kissed him, a kiss of passionate love. Without knowing, he gently stroked her face. At that moment, Morel came in, walking unsteadily, his hat over one eye. He paused in the doorway.
Make him more trouble,
he said with an ugly look. Mrs. Morel's feelings turned to sudden hatred of her drunken husband.
At least I'm not drunk, she said.
Morel disappeared and returned with a piece of cheese in his hand. It was what Mrs. Morel had bought for Paul.
And I didn't buy that for you. If you give me only 25 shillings, don't expect me to buy you cheese when you're already full up with beer.
What?
Shouted Morel.
What? Not for me.
He looked at the cheese in his hand and suddenly threw it into the fire. Paul jumped to his feet.
Waste your own food, he cried.
What? What?
Shouted Morel, taking up a threatening position.
I'll show you, you cheeky young fool.
All right, said Paul hotly. Show me.
At that moment, he wanted to hit his father violently.
There,
cried Morel, delivering a great blow just past his son's face. Even so close, he did not dare to touch the younger man.
Right,
said Paul, and was preparing to hit his father on the mouth. He ached to land the blow, but he heard a frightened sound behind him. His mother was pale as death and dark around the lips. Morel was dancing up to deliver another blow.
Father,
said Paul urgently. Morel shook and stood still.
Mother,
cried the boy.
Mother!
She began to struggle with herself. She could not move. Gradually, she got more control. Paul laid her down on the sofa and ran to fetch her something to drink. The tears were streaming down his face.
What's the matter with her?
Said Morel, sitting on the opposite side of the room.
She's fainted,
replied Paul. Morel took his boots off and went unsteadily to his bed. Paul knelt there, stroking his mother's hand.
It's nothing, my boy,
she whispered. Paul made up the fire, straightened the room, laid the things for breakfast, and brought his mother's candle. He followed her up the stairs and kissed her once more.
Good night, Mother. Good night, she said.
In the days that followed, everyone tried to forget what had taken place.